Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Theology Table, where angels dancing on the head of a pin can change your life. I'm Jarek.
I'm Bea.
And I'm Maria.
Today we're discussing a little bit of a strange topic. We're discussing a Catholic response to the hit cartoon show Rick and Morty. It's a deeply, deeply philosophical show, which I think is part of why it's so appealing to so many people. And so I guess the first question is, what sort of philosophy does Rick and Morty espouse? Like, what sort of philosophy are they giving us?
Well, one philosophy that's very huge in the show is called absurdism, and it derives from the French philosopher Albert Camus. And basically, absurdism, like, Camus, he's very interested in this idea of the absurd, where, you know, we live our lives, and, you know, as human beings, we try to look for existence, you know, like, why do I exist? You know, kind of like going back to Descartes, you know, why do I exist? But he finds that, you know, it doesn't really matter. Why are we asking this question? We should ultimately just, you know, look at life before us and enjoy that. And he writes this book called The Myth of Sisyphus. And Sisyphus is this Greek king, and he's condemned to, you know, take a huge rock, and he rolls it up, you know, the same hill, and then it always falls down, and he does
right before he gets to the top.
Over and over.
Yeah. And he has to do that for his entire life. And, like, Camus' famous line is that one must imagine Sisyphus happy, which sounds like a very, very strange idea. But in effect, what Camus' argument is that because Sisyphus realizes that he can never do what he's being commanded to do, that his life is in fact meaningless and he doesn't have a purpose that he can reach, he's liberated from the need to reach it, if that makes sense.
So there's a fundamental gap between the human desire for meaning and the reality of the universe, that there is no meaning. And
that's a good way of putting it.
And Camus and then Rick and Morty challenge us to embrace the meaningless of the universe, therefore releasing ourselves from this deep anxiety of trying to create meaning. At the end of the day, if we're able to do this successfully, we will be able to create a subjective meaning that is defined by us and that we can live out in our day-to-day life and be happy to some extent, as happy as you can be in a world that doesn't have meaning.
Yeah. And so it's important to, like, note that absurdism doesn't believe that, like, we're all just, like, bound to live, like, these sad, meaningless lives. The point is that we have to produce our own internal sense of meaning and pursue our own internal sense of meaning, which we get to create for ourselves. And so I think a lot of absurdists and a lot of nihilists who say that there is no intrinsic meaning in the universe will say, like, that there's something very freeing and very liberating about this because you get to choose to pursue your own ends.
I mean, it's definitely seems like a philosophy geared towards pleasure, right? Because you are searching for things that give you feelings of happiness, however fleeting it may be, and produce temporary happiness and meaning in your life. And I think one of the ways where we see this in Rick and Morty in a big way is that Rick is a drunk. He gets drunk constantly. And he is the most brilliant scientist in the multiverse, right? Not just the universe, but in every different dimension and the
every
corresponding
possible
realities that go with it.
And so, like, in that sense, it's funny because, like, and I think maybe Rick explicitly said this, that, like, if he doesn't believe in a God, but if there were anything like a God, he'd be the closest thing to it, which is a pretty sort of sobering thought. And it, like, sets the tone for exactly what you're dealing with in terms of the outlook of the show on life and on questions of theology. Theology doesn't exist. There's nothing to talk about. And so I guess, like, the first question for us facing this philosophy is, like, how do we appraise it as Christians? Is there something to it at all? Is it right? Is it completely wrong? Like, how do we approach that exactly?
And I think before we appraise it, we should name and recognize the fact this show is very appealing for a lot of different reasons, even to Catholics and Christians who are watching it, right? It says that there's a lot of crazy, absurd things that are going on in life, and it's okay to laugh about it. And maybe you can speak more to this, babe, like in our current cultural context, that really seems to be discouraged.
I mean, in our, you know, in the status quo, we, as, you know, as general society, we don't want to be, you know, ruled by God or by some higher being. We want to be able to determine meaning for ourselves and live life how we see fit, not how, you know, some objective reality sees fit. It's like, I make my own meaning. I want to live my life. So that's why we have this whole rise, of, you know, like, kind of surrounding the sexual revolution. Everyone just, you know, wants to engage in those kind of acts, even though there are consequences to those acts.
And so from that response, it seems pretty clearly that, like, we as Catholics, or we as Christians in general, like, absurdism is not something that we can subscribe to.
Yes.
It's very clear that absurdism, the notion of there not being an objective meaning or an objective order for the universe, an objective purpose, and like, even independently, like, that alone rules out any sort of theism in some respect. But then absurdism goes a step further and says, like, that, I mean, because Christianity holds that we each have an individual purpose. And that's something that absurdism would think, what does that even mean? We can't have our own purpose if the universe is meaningless.
Yeah, it really just disregards the question, like, why are we asking in the first place that we exist? Like, for example, St. Augustine in, is it book 9 of the Confessions?
Maybe, I don't,
He speaks about memory and...
Book 10.
Yeah, book 10. Yeah. So he's speaking about memory and how you know, he's asking himself, like, he's talking to God, but why is it that he knows God? And then he comes to the realization that it was God who put, you know, himself, like, in his mind.
Memory and his mind.
Yeah. And that's something where I think that St. Augustine and Dan Harmon, the creator of Rick and Morty, might actually agree that human beings are wired to search for meaning. Now, obviously, they see the end result of that search as two very different
very
things.
Different.
But can we... Yeah. But, you know, God or nothing. But,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Like, can we talk for a bit about what are the implications of naming that as, like, a major part of absurdism, that human beings are hardwired to search for meaning? That's something that jives really well with Catholicism.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we both agree completely on. And I guess the question is, does that being wired for meaning make sense in any respect whatsoever? And it's clear the Catholics would say, of course it makes sense. Of course we're wired for meaning, because our ultimate end is determined by an omnipotent, omnibenevolent creator, God, who loves us as a father. Like, that just makes intrinsic sense as to why we are wired for meaning, because there is meaning. We desire something because there is something to be desired. Whereas I think for absurdism, it's very much like this desire. Like, they don't know why we have a desire, but they just know that it doesn't make sense. It doesn't jive with their view of the way that the universe operates.
That's interesting. And then going along with that, you know, the notion of telos, that we have this ultimate end. There is no ultimate end to reach in absurdism.
It's self-chosen. And like, that's the part that I think is most appealing about it, is that you get to choose your own end. And the show, like, depicts this very, very clearly in that episode where Rick freezes time so that his grandkids can get the house cleaned before the parents come home. And it turns out the time is frozen for a lot longer than it takes for the parents to come home. They're just, like, hanging out. He's hanging out with his grandkids and just, like, you know, having fun with them and messing around and whatever. Like, it's clear that they provide some sense of meaning to his life. And it's because that he's allowed them to provide a sense of meaning to his life. He's chosen it.
But at the same time, I think over the kind of the arc of the cartoon, we see the grandkids, especially Morty, gain an increased significance in Rick's life, right? And so almost... At the beginning, Rick is, you know, he's curmudgeonly, he's deeply cynical, right? He is a despairing alcoholic. Even though he might be the god of the multiverse, or the closest thing there is to a god, he is a despairing alcoholic. And from his, like, preconceived notions of how meaning works and how the world works and everything, he should have shut Morty out from the very beginning. But we see a change in Rick over the course of the series as he becomes
Absolutely.
Closer to the grandkids. So, I mean, what do you guys think about this change? That if Rick were truly, you know, the smartest man, whatever, and truly understood that the world was meaningless, he should have shut it out from the beginning. You know, he already had enough things to create meaning in his life, like alcohol and science and this and that. I guess what I'm asking is, like, what do we make of the implicit value of human relations that shows up in Rick and Morty? Maybe almost it seems like against the will of Rick, against...
Yeah, that's the weird part, is that, like, I think that's another part where actually Dan Harmon and Catholicism can actually come to some level of agreement. It seems, at least to the on my reading of the show, that Rick sees his relationships... Rick sees himself as finding meaning only in relationship with other persons, with other people, mostly his grandkids, to some degree his daughter. And that's something that Catholics would absolutely agree on, that humans are wired not just for meaning, but also for relationship.
But as an absurdist, I have to say that relationships bring more pain and suffering than they do pleasure, right? And if you're absurdist, you want to get, you know, the most subjective happiness you can out of any moment. But if you have other people in your life, you have to care for them, you have to deal with their nonsense sometimes, etc., etc. Maybe they're bringing a net negative to your life, so why would he keep them in there, you know?
I think that's a fabulous question that the absurdist has to ask, but I think that's there's a sense in which this show has already sowed the seeds of its own undoing if we're reading it as a purely absurdist show, because in the same sense that we're wired to search for meaning, whether it exists or not, we're wired for relationship, whether it's rational or not. Yes. And so you can either say, okay, this doesn't make sense and we have to overcome it and fight to overcome it, or we can say, this tells us something intrinsic and real and objective about the human person.
Yes, and like going deeper, it's not only are we called into relationship, but also to love, you know. That's why are we in these relationships to begin with? Are we just using other people, or is it because we're expressing love towards the other, as Aquinas says, we're willing the good of the other.
That's beautiful, Bea. Yeah,
and that's and like I think the way that the show can sort of save itself, if we're reading it as a purely absurdist show, is that, like, you know, regardless of why Rick wants what he wants, he's pursuing what he wants because he wants it. His own wanting makes it the object of his desire. It's not because of any independent thing. But, like, and the question of why to them seems like nonsense. It can just be, like, you know, it can just be a function of evolution that we desire things. It can, like, it doesn't make a difference. Right? Yeah.
You know, just this desire of being without, and that's something that you want out there, so you reach towards that thing.
And so, like, in a sense, the ethics of Rick and Morty are very, very complicated because, like, this basic metaphysics seems to be so different. Whereas the Christian metaphysic has an ordered universe, ordered towards one thing, which is that God, its creator, the sort of nihilistic / absurdist metaphysic has nothing of that. And that totally has, like, an impact on the way that they're invited to live their lives and that we're invited to live our lives.
So, vaguely connecting that point with our recent conversation, Derek and Bea, you both brought up the fact that, you know, our arguments and critiques are assuming that this is a purely absurdist show, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys think that any form of art or social engagement or anything can be purely absurdist? Like, is it a philosophy that holds up 100%? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Isn't
Picasso absurdist in how he...
I don't know personally if he is. But, like, I think so. Because, I mean, there's no question that art itself includes some sort of meaning in it. You can't have meaningless art, or else it's not art. It's not communicative.
Yeah.
It's not expressive of anything if there's no meaning. Yeah. But the question is where that meaning comes from and how we get our meanings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's, you can't have a piece of art which tries to express a meaning independent of wherever it came from. Just say, like, I feel this, I want to express this, and because I want to express this, it makes it so. But I think, as we talked about with Rick and Morty earlier, like, at least the particular way that they try to make the show unfold, Rick still has intrinsic desires. I mean, it's not even, like, we can't even say they're human desires because he's not human, but they're just, like, intrinsic desires. for relation with other people. And I think, Maria, earlier when we were just, like, talking before we started recording, you brought up that great scene, and you can describe it better than I can, where they're with the superheroes. Like, yeah, go ahead and explain that scene, I think.
Sure. So in one episode, I apologize, I forget which season it's from, but Rick and Morty are invited on this superhero-saving quest of intergalactic superheroes, and they get to join them as a team. And these folks have already worked with Rick, and he hates them, but Morty really looks up to them. So they go, Morty becomes a part of the squad, which we find out later is super dysfunctional. But Rick is really, really upset that he's losing the admiration and love of his grandson. So in typical Rick fashion, he becomes drunk, and he creates a doomsday device, which is going to destroy everything, and tricks the superheroes into the doomsday device and locks it, and they have to solve these puzzles, da-da-da-da-da. And so the final puzzle is that, and keep in mind that Rick is, like, blackout drunk when this happens. So sober Rick is in the chamber with the superheroes and Morty, but blackout drunk Rick was the one who created the doomsday device and the one who's on the screen giving instructions. And the final instruction is to figure out who he loves the most, right? Which in the absurdist world, like, prepare for something crazy because it's not going to make any sense. So sober Rick goes, oh, it's got to be Morty. And he has this really heartwarming scene where he says, you know, Morty, it's something like I've really enjoyed, like, you know, getting to know you. You're my grandson and I love you. And I felt jealous because I thought that your love was going away. And Morty's like, whoa, no way, Rick. Like, I got the feels, this and that. And then drunk Rick comes back on the screen. He says, actually, it was Newt Newt, this little, like, alien blob thing, because Newt Newt laughed at his jokes last night. What do we make of that? And the relation between it. What do we make of the fact that sober Rick confesses his love for his grandson, but drunk Rick, it's just the random dude who laughed at his jokes.
I guess you could interpret that in two ways. You could interpret that as the first way, which I think is the way that the show is sort of begging for it to be interpreted. Maybe not. But the way that some people will interpret the show, which is like, drunk Rick was the real Rick. Like, the honest one who was willing to say what he actually thought. And that, like, in fact, Rick has no desires for meanings whatsoever, except, like, his own arbitrary stuff. The second reading can be that the real Rick was the sober one. The one who's rational and the one who is self-aware. The one who actually expresses this deep love for his grandson and for his, like, partners in crime, so to speak. And I think it's very clear that from a Catholic perspective, we would take the sober one to be the more real one. Because humans are, in addition to being relational, we're also rational beings. Having reason and using reason is part of our nature as human beings. And this is everywhere. It's in Augustine, it's in Aquinas, it's in every pretty much Catholic theologian who's ever lived. And every Catholic philosopher who's ever lived, that reason is something particular, not necessarily just particular to humans, but something that humans have to exercise in a unique way, and something that is part of the human experience in an essential way. And so in that respect, that scene is very complicated to interpret, because it can go two ways.
Yeah. No, you're so right. It does depend on who's watching it there.
And then, like, I think there's also the question of, like, this existential dread, which, like, sort of permeates Rick's experience throughout the show. I talking to a lot of people who, like, because, I mean, there are so many people who say, like, something along the lines of, I want to believe in God, but I'm worried that my desire to believe in him biases me towards believing in him, or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so they're like, you know, it's great. This is a really convenient system. It provides an explanation for why we have meaning. It provides an explanation for what my meaning is. It gives me how to get there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. On an existential level, it makes a lot of sense. But their worry is, I'm biased because of that. Because I want this, I'm biased.
Everyone has a bias towards a certain thing. But there's always bias. You can't run away from bias. And to add along to that, also this notion of ennui, like the sense of boredom. Perhaps Rick is, you know, just going on all these adventures and making all this stuff because he's just bored with his life. There's no meaning. Like, he needs to, you know, return to making his own meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an interesting
I don't know if we can particularly pursue it, but just a point. It's really interesting the way you point that out, that there's no contemplation at all in the universe of Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
It's go, 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 go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess as a very last note before we end, like, what do we do about this? Like, how do we approach this show? If it's, I mean, its philosophical underpinnings are so sort of opposed to a Catholic or a Christian system.
And yet I find it hilarious.
What do we do?
Well, one of the things which I've been wondering about this show is that, is it reasonable to accept a philosophy that comes from despair, right? You have to think of where the environment this is coming out of. And so absurdism and existentialism hit their big crescendo in post-World War II France, which was bombed out. It was depressed. A lot of the people were refugees. It was economically very poor. In Rick and Morty, the more philosophical parts of it are coming out of the experience of Rick, right? Who, yeah, he's a genius. That's really cool. But he is a despairing, cynical drunk. Is it reasonable to accept this from these sources? I guess what I'm saying is I almost see it almost like heresy, right? Like, most of it is reasonable. You think of it, and everything can be traced back to heresy.
I'm a pickle.
Heresy! Heresy button!
Yeah, where's the heresy button for that one?
Where's Ada with the heresy button? Right? But, like, it's part of a truth, and that's what makes it so appealing, is that you look at it and you recognize the truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the full experience.
Yeah. And so I guess on that note, like, where do we end it? I guess engaging with the show in itself isn't a bad thing, as long as we're aware of what's going on. And because, I mean, there's a sense of the show which is very real and speaks to a very real part of the human experience. As long as we know that the show's answers aren't our answers, at least as far as we can tell. Who knows? Maybe this entire show is a satire and Dan Harmon in the last episode is going to, like, bring us to a totally Christian ending. Not likely at all. at all. But, yeah, I think on that note, we'll just close the prayer of St. Thomas. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please pray with us the prayer of St. Thomas Aquinas. In the name of the Father, of the Son, of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
Grant us, O Lord, minds to know you, hearts to seek you,
wisdom to
find
you,
conduct pleasing to you,
faithful
perseverance
in waiting for you,
and a hope of finally embracing you.
Amen.